And welcome to another edition of what I call American Exposé. This is Chris Gerner speaking to you on the 7th of April, 2005. The mess continues, the deception continues, and the ultimate deception that I see in this day and time is the Congressional Medal of Honor, as I see dated April 5th, from the Oklahoman, hero gets top medal after death. That's right, hero gets top medal after death. 2 years to the day after Sergeant First Class Paul Smith was killed in a fierce firefight in Iraq, President Bush delivered the Medal of Honor to the slain soldier's 11-year-old son Monday in an emotional White House ceremony. Smith's comrades credited him with saving more than 100 American lives by single-handedly thwarting an Iraqi counterattack in the early days of the invasion. Braving a steady barrage of enemy fire, Smith climbed into a damaged armored vehicle and turned its 50-caliber machine gun on the attacking Iraqis. Smith, 33, killed about 50 enemy soldiers before he was mortally wounded. He's the first soldier from the Iraq War to receive the nation's highest military honor. Quote, on this day 2 years ago, Sergeant Smith gave his all for his men, end quote, Bush said, standing next to Smith's widow, Bridget Smith, her son, David, and her daughter, Jessica. Bridget Smith decided the couple's son would accept the medal on his father's behalf. Quote, it was a very easy decision for me because, after all, he's the man of the house now, end quote, she said Monday. Bridget Smith fought tears as she clasped her children's hands during the brief ceremony in the East Room of the White House. The family lives in Holiday, Florida. The Medal of Honor is only the third given for action since the Vietnam War and the first from the Iraq War. Bush said Smith showed, quote, total disregard for his own life, end quote, while repulsing Iraqi attackers. Quote, 5 years later, Baghdad fell and the Iraqi people were liberated, end quote, the president said. Isn't that amazing? During a stretch of 15 minutes or longer, Smith fired more than 300 rounds as Private Michael Seaman, protected inside the M113, passed him ammunition. Then enemy fire struck him and mortally wounded him. The Congressional Medal of Honor, the upside-down five-pointed star, the upside-down pentagram. As Dennis has sent this information, this UNHCR, UN High Commissioner for Refugees, the UN Refugee Agency, and he notes at the bottom that this site is supplied by Pentagram, site designed by Pentagram. Isn't that interesting? Absolutely incredible. And certainly, I see so much going on with this UN system, and most don't pay attention, but this is our responsibility, or my responsibility, and others that see what I see. The situation is quite regurgitating. Ms. Wendy Chamberlain was appointed acting United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees following the resignation of Mr. Rud Lubbers on February 20, 2005. Mr. Lubbers, UNHCR's ninth High Commissioner, had served since January 1, 2001, when he succeeded Mrs. Sadako Ogata of Japan. Secretary General Kofi Annan asked Ms. Chamberlain to serve as acting High Commissioner until a new High Commissioner is appointed. Ms. Chamberlain, who works closely with Assistant High Commissioner Camille Majorny, heads one of the world's principal humanitarian agencies with more than 6,000 staff in over 115 countries, providing protection and assistance to some 17 million refugees and others of concern. The UN Refugee Agency's total budget for 2005 is more than $1 billion. Ms. Chamberlain joined UNHCR as Deputy High Commissioner on January 19, 2004, after 28 years in the U.S. Foreign Service. Serving primarily in Asia, and the Middle East. She joined the Foreign Service in 1975 after working as a volunteer teacher in Laos. Ms. Chamberlain rose to become ambassador to Laos and later Pakistan. She also worked on foreign aid accounts for Arab-Israeli affairs and held high-ranking positions in counterterrorism and international narcotics control. There's more on this if you care to research it. It's supplied by Dennis on the website. There's so much given attention to refugees at this point in time. And why do you think that is? And how do you think that comes about? And how come we have more refugees today in 2005 than any time in U.S. history or world history, put it that way? That's a question we should all be concentrating on. Because at this point in time, we're all potential refugees. How many refugees were created out of the series of tornadoes or hurricanes that hit Florida? How many in this country were devastated? That's a crazy situation. Weather modification to create chaos and environmental modification and HAARP, which we never are told about. We're never told about any of this. From the UNHCR website, Protecting Refugees. The 50th anniversary, the wall behind which refugees can shelter, the 1951 Geneva Convention, relating to the status of refugees, is the key legal document in defining who is a refugee, the rights and the legal obligations of states. States are countries in the UN's eyes. Keep that in mind all the time. The 1967 protocol removed geographical and temporal restrictions on the convention. In July 2001, UNHCR published a special edition of its Refugees magazine dedicated to the 50th anniversary of the convention. And this is available for you on the website to read as well, AmericanExpose.com. And speaking of refugees, listeners. Yes. Speaking of refugees, listeners, we have in Popular Science, the latest edition of Popular Science. I believe it's the May edition. I'm sure it's the May edition. Here we have Defending the Front. And certainly this is a controlled publication, listeners, as most of you realize, after this 9/11 article that was recently published in Popular Mechanics. Here we see Defending the Front. Invasive species are swift, prolific, and headed our way. Scientists hope to stay one step ahead of them. I was talking with Darren last night, and he was discussing, well, what if there is no such thing as an invasive species? And that is a thought that should not be forgotten by any of us. That could be a scenario. So this article is very, very interesting. It starts out by stating, what do salt, cedar, fire ants, and West Nile virus have in common? No respect for borders. Salt cedar, a Eurasian shrub, lines nearly every stream bed in the United States, tapping into water tables and acting as tinder for a burn. Red imported fire ants from South America march across the southern United States and Puerto Rico, snuffing out small animals, damaging crops, and short-circuiting electrical systems along the way. West Nile virus, first detected in Africa, has now spread throughout 48 states, seven Canadian provinces, and Mexico, killing more than 500 people and millions of birds. These invasive species were brought here from other countries, either accidentally or intentionally, along with 50,000 other species of plants, animals, and pathogens. Now, once again, no publicity about aerial spraying. What is going on with the aerial spraying that's going on that we've seen over the years? What could that have to do with killing the birds and the animals, the small insects, creating more endangered species? quote, trying to predict where organisms move in space and time is the premier challenge of the 21st century, end quote, says Tom Stolgren, director of the National Institute of Invasive Species Science at the U.S. Geological Survey, the USGS. Quote, it's going to take our very best science, end quote, building upon what has become a full-scale federal battle against the unwanted immigrants. The USGS and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, have joined forces to create an invasive species forecasting system, an ambitious project to stop exotics before they steamroll natural ecosystems. It won't be easy. More invasives arrive every day. Globalization has increased travel, trade, and, in turn, the international transport of harmful species. Oh my, do I smell Hegelian dialectic here? As I interject. Quote, it's like Darwin on steroids, end quote, says Stolgren, except that the beagle is coming to us, end quote. Not all introduced species cause problems. 99% of U.S. food crops originated elsewhere, for instance. But roughly 15% wreak astounding economic and ecological havoc. Fisheries, agriculture, and public health have suffered from their proliferation, as have native plants and animals. Invasives cost the United States $137 billion a year, more than all other natural disasters combined. They're also partially responsible for 40% of the country's extinctions and 42% of species considered federally threatened and endangered. Oh my. What does popular science have to say about invasive species, listeners? Already some suspicious thoughts here in the first few columns of this article. Forced to fill the role of these species, absent national enemies, land and water managers have resorted to just about everything that comes to mind. To control leafy spurge, a water-thirsty weed that has spread across 35 states, they've tried mowing, burning, and plowing it. They have treated it with herbicides and unleashed upon it hordes of insects, goats, and sheep. On the East Coast, they've tried fencing, trapping, and poisoning European green crabs. European green crabs? You've got to be joking. Which prey on native crabs and oysters, and have subjected zebra mussels, which clog water filtration and electric generating plants, to chlorination, shock treatment, and ultraviolet light. The Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has even suggested that people eat away at its neutral problems. It touts the aquatic rodent, which has denuded more than 80,000 acres of marsh, as a tasty, low-fat meat. But don't run for your barbecue just yet. At long last, there's a new, more formidable weapon in the stewardship arsenal: satellite, telemetry, and supercomputers. Charged with studying invasive species on federal lands, the USGS, at its Fort Collins Science Center in Colorado, excels at the down and dirty work of field sampling. NASA, through its Office of Earth Science, brings to the table expertise in remote sensing. Predictive computer models will integrate both kinds of data, ground measurements, and satellite observations, and map patterns of invasive species and habitats vulnerable to invasion. Natural resource managers will use this information to decide what fronts to defend first. Look at all the funding that's going to invasive species, listeners, as we continue to find ways to survive, as the GM plant out here in Oklahoma has cut back an entire shift. In other words, they've laid off 850 people coming the middle of this month, according to my sources. As the economy continues to dwindle, this is what's going on with NASA and the U.S. Geological Survey. A prototype of the new invasive species forecasting system is now being tested at three sites, including Rocky Mountain National Park. More than 100 different invasive species have silently overtaken this spectacular 275,770-acre treasure. In order to gauge where these species tend to cluster, USGS field teams set up 150 plots across 24 different habitats and recorded the plant communities found in each. They discovered that wet meadows and aspen stands are the choice real estate. But because field data samples only a fraction of the land, remote sensing must extrapolate it to the big picture. As a general rule, plants prefer the good life, high light, high nitrogen, and high moisture. So by measuring biological productivity or chlorophyll levels, NASA's Landsat 7, that's NASA's Landsat 7, and Terra satellites identify potential hotspots for invasion across the entire national park. That's an oversimplification, of course. Factors such as elevation, soil composition, carbon storage, and topography are also important predictors of vulnerable habitats. And all that data requires high-performance computing to crunch. Predictive models used to take the USGS 3 weeks to run. During that time period, one kudzu vine, a Japanese import that covers 7 million acres of southern land and infrastructure, could have crept another 21 feet. Yes. Since NASA introduced state-of-the-art Apple G5X serve clusters and parallel processing, the modeling time is down to a mere 2 minutes. Quote, information science and technology are going to play an ever-important role in dealing with complex ecological problems, end quote, says John Scanese, program scientist for NASA's Invasive Species National Application. And because invasive species change an ecosystem's fire cycle, hydrology and ability to store carbon, understanding how species move across a landscape, will help refine computer models that forecast climate change and disease outbreaks also. As for the current ground war, USGS and NASA scientists plan to apply the forecasting system to habitats across the rest of the country and to expand its focus from plants to insects, animals, fish, fungi, and microbes. Eventually, an online tool will produce maps for preserve and park managers and offer the public a glimpse of what organisms are heading their way. With everyone aware of invasive species, next move, they'll have a far difficult time making it. And I thought you should hear this article in Popular Mechanics, because look at how we're being attacked on all fronts. Financially, we're economically devastated. Legal tender for all debts, public and private, has been on our paper money for years. Our business and industry has disappeared below the border and overseas. There is a move, apparently, to get us out of the World Trade Organization. I don't know whether I have that information readily available right now, but apparently that is a move in place to get us out of the WTO. I don't know how in the world you can get out of any of this UN quagmire when you realize that the money system is controlled by the IMF with the Federal Reserve. The Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. Governor of the IMF. I believe his name is John Snow. And the alternate U.S. Governor of the IMF is Alan Greenspan. Darren Weeks is responsible for that documentation. So we see here, we deal with invasive species, we deal with the Middle East mess, we deal with what's going on below the border. According to Reuters, a right-wing militia patrolling the Mexican border to catch illegal immigrants is pitting some residents in favor of old-style frontier justice against critics who say the militiamen are the real threat. Here it is. Between 300 and 400 Minutemen Project volunteers, some of them armed, have come to Arizona to stake out a 23-mile section of the border throughout April. They say it is a peaceful political protest, although some are armed with pistols, oh my God. Any number of local residents have joined the patrols or turned out to support them. Now, listeners, the people below the border coming to this country, if you were in their shoes, in their circumstance, you would be doing the same thing, trying to better your life for your family. That's what most of these people are doing. Yes, drug trafficking is going on. And drugs coming into this country, where does that come from? Where did it originate from? Some certainly have disclosed drugs being purposely brought in to this country by government agencies, like the Central Intelligence Agency. And how do you get to the bottom of that? How do you research that? How do you prove that? You can't prove it. But if you and I were in the same situation that those below the border are, in a destitute situation, where NAFTA was supposed to upgrade the people of Mexico, uplift them, which it never did. You know, people like Vicente Fox, the entire UN system needs to be put on trial. But we don't need a trial with a bunch of lawyers working back and forth. We need a public trial with public people, with good down-home people that understand what's going on in the world and the country. This is the last outpost for freedom, what's left of what we have for freedom in America. Homeland Security was designed long before September 11, 2001. Homeland Security had to be put into place to control and manipulate populations, to enforce Agenda 21. That's what Homeland Security is all about. To enforce all aspects of Agenda 21. This article from Reuters continues. Once again, they say it is a peaceful political protest, although some are armed with pistols, and a number of local residents have joined the patrols or turned out to support them. Others, however, have held protest and watched with suspicion the volunteers' arrival in camper vans and four-wheel drive vehicles, some decked out with gun racks. Oh, my God, they've got gun racks in their trucks. See how the political spin goes against firearms? Listeners, just keep in mind, we're supposed to lose our firearms. According to State Department Publication 7277, we're supposed to be completely disarmed in this country. It's been upgraded by Public Laws 101-216, Public Law 101-216 from 1989, upgrades Public Law 87-297 from 1961 that brought State Department Publication 7277 into law. We are to be disarmed one way or the other, listeners. The UN system wants the entire world disarmed. And that's the global draconian direction that is well into place. This article continues from Reuters. In the old copper mining town Bisbee, which reinvented itself as a refuge for writers and painters after the mine closed in the 1970s, many eyed the vigilantes with suspicion. Quote, I had a Salvadoran work for me for 6 months, and it's not uncommon for people here to drive a migrant north in their car rather than hand them over to the U.S. Border Patrol, end quote, said cafe owner Charles Lewis. Lewis and some other residents in this town in the Mule Mountains, just north of the border, say they fear the Minutemen volunteers much more than the migrants who trek across ranches and public land on the way north. And this is the point and the problem that I've been talking about for years. The opportunity for conflict has arrived. The opportunity for absolute conflict has arrived. And this is the situation that we live today, listeners. The Hegelian dialectic at the border. Where is it going to go from here on out? That is the problem. And we're all going to wait and see. I'm going to continue with this on the other side. Stay with me.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Who is a crab's best friend? That's next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
When we discover the unexpected in the creation, we are reminded that reality is much, much bigger than our small thoughts. That's a hint. God himself says in the Bible, quote, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways." Well, this means that when we study our world, we must keep in mind that nothing forced God to make things in a certain way. He was completely free. When God made an orderly creation, his logic and his creativity are far, far above ours. Those who believe in a creator learn to expect delightful surprises in God's world. Many of these surprises leave those who want to say that the world is a result of mindless, natural forces with little idea of how to explain the surprises according to their system. One of these surprises was found in a strange relationship between the Paguirid crab and the sea anemone. The Paguirid crab lives in a shell which is really too small to hold it. So the anemone molds itself to cover the crab and attaches himself to that crab. This gives the crab plenty of freedom of movement because part of his living shell is pliable. However, the anemone takes advantage of his position by stealing much of the crab's food. But if the crab is removed from this species of anemone, the anemone will die. This strange relationship is vital to both these creatures, so far apart on the evolutionary scale. This relationship makes no sense at all unless there is a creator.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
continue with this border mess and created crisis. Before I do that, though, keep in mind, back in 2002, summer of 2002, I wasn't broadcasting, but I did hear, and most of you are going to remember what I say from the past, and I say it again, President Vicente Fox, and once again, everybody's a president in every country for our consumption, to dumb us down, as we at one time were the only country in the world with a president. Now everyone is a president, to dumb us down, to make us feel like every country is the same as ours. So once again, President Vicente Fox of Mexico said, my people coming to the U.S. are not illegal immigrants. They're migrants under human rights treaties, and he's absolutely correct. The way things are with the State Department operating the U.S. mission to the United Nations, listeners. That's it. Back to this Reuters article, back to the last paragraph. Lewis and some other residents in this town in the Mule Mountains just north of the border say they fear the Minutemen volunteers much more than the migrants who trek across the ranches and public land on the way north. Quote, I'd rather take my chances with the Mexicans than one of these U.S. military-type idiots taking part in the patrols, end quote, local truck driver John Porter told Reuters, as he told the Sun on a sidewalk table outside the Daily Diner. Quote, migrants pay their taxes, and I don't have a problem with them, end quote, he added. And what taxes are they talking about? The taxes that you pay on the products you purchase. That is the only taxes that migrants pay for, is whatever they purchase, they pay their taxes on what they purchase. That is the only taxes they pay for, listeners. That is so ludicrous for some idiot to make a stupid statement like this. John Porter, a local truck driver. This guy is a real piece of work. I'd rather take my chances with the Mexicans than one of these U.S. military-type idiots taking part in the patrols. This guy is an idiot. Migrants pay their taxes, and I don't have a problem with them. They pay their taxes by whatever they purchase, just like the rest of us. You have no choice but to pay your taxes when you purchase something. Bottom line. This article continues, and it's very, very interesting, and thank you, Dennis. However, a few miles up the road in Tombstone, where the Minutemen volunteers come to register for the patrols at a local newspaper, gunslingers have been a part of a tradition since Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday gunned down the Clantons and McClurys in a legendary gunfight at the OK Corral. The sight of volunteers from across the United States treading the sidewalks with pistols riding on their hip raises no eyebrows in the one-time silver mining town. Quote, we have 500 people a day with guns on their hips. So for us, it's nothing unusual, end quote, Tombstone Mayor Andrew DeJornet told Reuters. Quote, the Minutemen fall within the long American tradition that includes freedom of speech and the right to bear arms, and I don't have a problem with that, end quote, he added. Well, hear, hear for him, I say. Standing tall in a Stetson hat in the main street outside the OK Corral site, Arcangelo Coco says he applauds the group of volunteers who have come into the area with their brand of frontier justice. Quote, I support the Minutemen, and if I see them, I'll shake their hand, end quote, Coco said, adding that they are not gunslingers, but are just, quote, out to defend themselves, end quote. Others in the town, which hosts reenactments of the famous OO gunfight each day at 2 o'clock sharp on the site of the long-vanished corral, feel at ease with the Minutemen goal of sealing the U.S. border of illegal migrants from Mexico. Quote, I think they'll help as they are so many people coming over here shouldn't be here, end quote, said retiree Vinny Box as he munched on popcorn in a gift shop selling cowboy souvenirs. Quote, something needs to be done about the border as it's wide open, end quote. Well, we certainly have a Hegelian dialectic at the border, and we've certainly had this for years. I've been talking about this for years. And it's most unfortunate to have this situation, but it's most unfortunate to have every situation that we have today, including the disappearance of our jobs, the disappearance of our industry below the border and overseas. It's a sad, sad commentary to have all this that's going on. It's absolutely incredible that we are able to do what we can to get the truth out, to document where we go. The AmericanExpose.com website has more documentation than anybody could ever ask for, connecting to other websites that have more documentation than anybody could ever ask for. The source of information should be there to connect all these dots. Meanwhile, Sustainable America, well, it's in Popular Mechanics as well. America 2025 is in the latest edition of Popular Mechanics, May 2005. Hal will live in snap-together houses, play soccer with robots, drive cars with four motors, and vacation in orbit, all in the custom-designed, easy-to-repair world of tomorrow. And this is a very, very interesting article as well. I don't know where to take it too far, but this article says, look 100 years into the future, or even 50, and you're creating science fiction. 20 years, though, is just on the edge of the horizon. While the details are fuzzy, the broad outlines of technology are already in view. In 2025, keep in mind the Air Force has a report, Owning the Weather 2025. I would say Owning the Weather 2005 would be more appropriate. Quote, in other words, we get back to this, though. In 2025, the move from mass production to mass customization, as MIT architect Ken Larson puts it, will be much advanced. Today, only the rich can afford to design a unique house. In 20 years, it'll be nearly as common as ordering a custom-built computer. We're already switching from broadcast media to personalized media by 2025. We'll access a universe of movies, music, news, and more from nearly anywhere as easily as we make cell phone calls today. Such services will develop hand-in-hand with ever-richer webs of information. The battlefield, too, will be transformed by such networks, explains CENTCOM's Lieutenant General Lance Smith, as will home life and medicine. Yet the future isn't all about data links. Refreshingly, the stuff of yesterday's science fiction is now the easiest technology to predict. Will we go to Mars? Actually, it says, we will go to Mars, says the acting chief of NASA. Robots will clean our houses and help fight our battles. Hydrogen will fuel at least some of our cars, and space hotels really will tether chocolates to their zero-G pillows. Welcome to the year 2025. There's much more to this. Sustainable communities involved there? Absolutely. Unreachable goals, according to the Iron Mountain Report, going to Mars is an unreachable goal, listeners. Absolutely incredible. From the L.A. Times, listeners, dated April 7th, proposed LAPD immigrant policy change raises fears. Central American community leaders on Wednesday demanded to meet with Los Angeles Police Chief William J. Bratton to discuss proposed guidelines allowing police to make limited immigration inquiries about convicted felons they suspect re-entered the U.S. illegally. Oh boy, this is going to raise some eyebrows. Under Special Order 40, adopted in 1979 to encourage illegal immigrants to report crime, LAPD officers are prevented from inquiring about a person's residency status. However, Bratton plans to issue a clarification stating that officers can check on felons, mostly violent gang members, who were deported only to return illegally. What a Hegelian setup this is. More than half a dozen of the community activists said clarifying the police's relationship with federal immigration officials could discourage immigrant witnesses or victims from turning to authorities to help fight crime. Quote, we believe the direct effect of these changes will mean less trust from our community, end quote, said Salvador Senabera, development director for El Reciente, which provides legal aid and social services to Central American refugees. The activists said they wanted to hear from Bratton himself about the specific policy language as well as safeguards to prevent police from casting a wider net to target illegal immigrants. Listeners, I've seen demonstrations about illegal immigration attacked by foreigners from below the border, attacking people peacefully protesting illegal immigration, turning it into a mess. This has happened a few times in the past. They turn violent. The police hardly do anything, or did anything. And that was all engineered by Glenn Spencer, that demonstration. But the UN system is the fault of it all. Human rights treaties are the reason behind it all. And I keep repeating myself over and over and over again because the documentation stands solid. And if people don't realize that and don't do their own research to verify what I say, to verify for themselves what I say, so they can say it themselves, there's where the problem is. Executive Order 13107 on the 50th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was done on December 10th, 1948. Eleanor Roosevelt was the big author of that Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Eleanor Roosevelt is a closet communist, or was, just like her hubby, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a closet communist. Anyway, on December 10, 1998, President Clinton signed Executive Order 13107, Implementation of Human Rights Treaties. That is the bottom line of where we are today. According to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, I repeat, listeners, according to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 13, everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state. Number 2, everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and return to his country. That is locked in stone. That is just what it is. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, implementation of human rights treaties, implementing itself to this very, very day. Article 14 states everyone has the right to work and to enjoy in other countries asylum from prosecution. And number 2, this right may not be invoked in the case of prosecutions genuinely arising from non-political crimes or from acts contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. Article 15, everyone has the right to a nationality. Number 2, no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his nationality nor denied the right to change his nationality. What does that mean to you, listeners? This is the Hegelian dialectic we live today at the border with immigration, commonly known from the UN system as migration. That is the bottom line. What do we have in America today? The implementation of the Communist Manifesto as well. A heavy progressive income tax. Abolition of rights of inheritance is underway. Confiscation of property is being done under the guise of drug crimes, quote-unquote drug crimes. I mean, if somebody happens to step on your property and sell some kind of illegal drug to someone else on your property, you may not even know those people, but you're going to lose your property if they get caught. Government ownership of communication and transportation, on its way, listeners. Government ownership of factories and agriculture, on its way, people. Government control of labor, wow, in its way. Corporate farms, regional planning. Farmers have been paid not to plant for years, listeners. And government control of education, that is the piece of icing on the cake right there. Article 19 should keep me in the clear of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. So I should feel pretty comfortable with that, shouldn't I? Article 25 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as this is being implemented to us today by Executive Order 13107 of December 10, 1998, Article 25 states, quote, everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his control. Number two, motherhood and childhood are entitled to special care and assistance. All children, whether born in or out of wedlock, shall enjoy the same social protection. Article 27, everyone has the right freely to participate in the cultural life of the community, to enjoy the arts, and to share in scientific advancements and its benefits. Number two, everyone has the right to the protection of the moral and material interest resulting from any scientific, literacy, or artistic production of which he is the author. Article 30, the last article of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Nothing in this declaration may be interpreted as implying for any state, group, or person any right to engage in any activity or to perform any act aimed at the destruction of any of the rights and freedoms set forth herein. So the LAPD is in an uphill battle, is my point of bringing that to you. They have been, for years, unable to inquire whether people are legal or not. And that is the way it is. That is the mess we have today. The Hegelian dialectic doing its thing wherever it can. Immigration will destroy this country. Immigration has destroyed other countries, or migration, as the jobs disappear. This turns to a service economy. Henry Kissinger said at the passage of NAFTA, this is one of the greatest steps towards a new world order than any step made in the past. Here, according to, apparently, Marine Corps Air Station Yuma, Arizona, dated April 7th, Marines preparing for combat in Iraq or Afghanistan have lost significant amounts of training time because of undocumented immigrants from Mexico have constantly wandered onto the bombing test range in Arizona, according to the commander of this base along the border. Virtually every Marine squadron headed to Iraq or Afghanistan receives combat training at the Marine Corps Air Station in Yuma, which for nearly 40 miles touches the U.S.-Mexico border in the southwestern corner of Arizona. The Border Patrol's focus in recent years on tightening the border in the eastern part of the state, where volunteer citizens this month have established their own observation points, has pushed more undocumented immigrants westward. Since July 2004, the training range has been shut down more than 500 times because of immigrants spotted on the range, causing a loss of more than 1,100 training hours, said Colonel James Cooney, the base's commanding officer. Cooney and Marines intercepted more than 1,500 undocumented immigrants on the training range last year, and in the first 3 months of this year, more than 1,100 base personnel detain the immigrants and call in Border Patrol agents to pick them up. Another big concern, he said, is the potential danger to undocumented immigrants. Quote, we just don't want them to come here because we're firing lasers. Aha, they're firing lasers. We're shooting machine guns. We're shooting 209-millimeter cannons, and we're dropping practice bombs, and we don't want to hurt anyone, in quote, they said, and they're firing lasers. New technology for the 21st century, people. Boy, that's a statement and a half. Laser weapons? Oh, my. Only the best for the U.N. military. That's what we are today, the U.N. military. Anybody has any disagreement with what I have to say, you certainly know where to email me on my website. We are the coalition. We are the U.N. The Secretary of the Treasury is U.S. Governor of the IMF. The United Nations and the IMF and Agenda 21 are being fully implemented in Iraq. We covered in one of the months past plenty of Agenda 21 in Iraq today. Agenda 21 is to be implemented in every country of the earth that is a member of the UN system. Taiwan would be a good place to be right now because they're not implementing Agenda 21 because they were kicked out of the United Nations in order for China to join the UN system. And that's what they call themselves, the UN system, people. That's what they call themselves, the UN system. Last summer, a Marine pilot dropped a practice bomb on a target, and seconds later, a few feet away, a small group of illegal immigrants scrambled from underneath a bush and ran down the range. The near miss was caught on a training tape that Cooney has reviewed. So far, the Marines said there have been no deaths of immigrants in the training exercises. And you have to be in their shoes. No one would want to scramble to this country unless they were destitute. And in 2005, that doesn't make much sense at all. And that is the way it is. It's a sad, sad commentary to have about what's going on. Much information about the mess at the border. It's going to get messier. It's going to get much, much messier. I'm so sorry that we have this. I'm so sorry that we have all this going on in all these years. According to the Associated Press, dated April 5th, Americans traveling to Canada and Mexico will need passports to come home to the United States under guidelines proposed Tuesday in the latest effort to deter terrorists from entering the country. Oh, yes. Papers, please. May I see your papers, please? What did I say after September 11, 2001? Immediately after that, I said, someday, soon, we will have roadblock engineers, I call them. Roadblock engineers. That's what I call them. That's what they'll call them, more than likely, roadblock engineers. There will be roadblocks. You won't be able to travel from city to city without your papers, please. The new rules, which would be phased in by 2008, apply to Americans traveling from Mexico, Canada, Bermuda, the Caribbean, and Panama. They also apply to citizens from those countries who want to enter the United States, prompting Canadian officials to announce that they might reciprocate. The regulations mark a dramatic shift from a policy that allows Americans to return home from neighboring countries without a passport. They also raise the potential for hampering terrorism and commercial traffic with the United States' two immediate neighbors. An estimated 60 million Americans, about 20% of the national population, have passports. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said U.S. officials have been working with their international counterparts for some time to shore up security measures without crimping the flow of commerce across the borders. The new rules were called for in intelligence legislation Congress passed last year. Oh, yes. The beat goes on. The mess continues. And I'm just about out of time. Plenty of good information on the website, AmericanExpose.com, listeners, and so much good information. I'm just so amazed at the ability to work together with certain people, and happy that we can. From the Associated Press, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is urging Congress to renew expiring provisions of a much-criticized anti-terrorism law enacted after September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, the law of the U.S. Patriot Act, the U.S. government gained increased powers to monitor and prosecute suspected terrorists and their alleged helpers. And keep in mind, September 11, 2001 is full of holes, just like April 19, 1995, the 10-year anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, full of holes. The deception continues, listeners. Listen to Darren Weeks tomorrow night and Monday night. My good friend and webmaster, as with Dennis and his information. Good night, and God bless you all.
Hi, I'm Eric Cederstrom for the Patriot Trading Group. Are you afraid to open your monthly investment statement? Are you happy when your dog bites the mailman? Then call the Patriot Trading Group at 1-800-951-